This is Perry Marshall. I'm here with Glenn Livingston, and I've worked with a lot of people who are doing various kinds of marketing, internet marketing, direct marketing. Glenn is definitely one of the sharpest pencils in the box, and one of the reasons for that is everything he does with a lot of care and attention and thoroughness. And I think the other thing is that Glenn brings a lot of skills from previous careers and previous backgrounds to bear. And I have found that that's where innovation always comes from, is when you bring new insights from an existing place where they're not new there. Glenn's brought a lot of stuff from psychology and from research work that he did. And, you know, some of these things, probably most of these things, are normal, everyday, not very profound or surprising things in those fields. But in the field of marketing or internet marketing, or especially the kind of internet marketing that very small companies or even individuals can do, nobody's ever heard of this stuff. Right, Glenn?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I could point to a number of students of mine where it's the same story in all the cases where they developed a certain set of skills, they learned things that other people don't know, and then started to apply them. So Glenn's research method really impressed me because initially it was getting 80% success rates in entering new markets, and as it's developed, he's kept closer and closer to 100%. And when you can go into a new market and be somewhere in the vicinity of completely sure whether it's going to work or not before you sink significant money in it, and when it passes all the tests and gets a green light through Glenn's method that it works almost 100% of the time, that is really impressive. If only Wall Street knew. Actually, Wall Street may eventually know, but it usually takes a long time before it gets that far. So Glenn, you and I are going to talk about what is this that you do.
We sure are.
How can people make their businesses a whole lot more prosperous with us?
We sure are. After I get done with having a great big swivel head from that introduction, I'll come down to earth and try to address those things.
Well, I'm not too worried about that. Nose to the grindstone. We're all trying to get our work done, right?
Yeah. Why don't I pick it up from what you were talking about with the interdisciplinary skill?
Mm-hmm.
It was actually very helpful to me that you pointed that out in the roundtable to me last year. And I realized that you've got this background and you don't realize that it just becomes part of how you think. But I realized that that is why I was able to develop the system. And background as a psychologist, and I worked with largely suicidal adolescents and a couple of families, but I think that the skill that I took from that was listening for very subtle nuances in people's conversation and how that would impact how I would go about treating them to connect with them and give them what they needed. And obviously that translates to a marketing context when you're trying to tune into the conversation that people are having in their head and you're looking for very subtle differences, not so much in the way that they present it, but because vehicle for interaction on the internet is a search engine, in the differences in the way that they type in keywords.
You know, your adolescent example, you know, the suicidal teenager one?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's a very high-risk situation, so you have to identify whatever cues you can to figure out when do you have to call a psychiatrist and get the patient to see one and get them on medication or get them to the hospital or get them to let you work with their parents or siblings or someone who is a real support for them because, you know, if a patient is very suicidal, then it's very risky and you can't really just talk to them in the office all by yourself. But on the other hand, when they were somewhat suicidal, it was actually a very bad choice to call a psychiatrist or talk to someone else in their family because they would lose some esteem and they would become more frightened of their impulses, and so you really have to make that call. And what I find was, there were two distinct ways that people would phrase their thoughts about killing themselves. One was, hey doc, I've been thinking about killing myself, and I wanted to talk it over. And when people would say, I'm thinking about killing myself, I wouldn't panic because there was some thought involved. And usually that meant they are thinking that there must be a solution to their problem, and they're thinking that a professional could help them, and very frequently, these kids were kids who initiated the call in and of themselves. They weren't dragged in. On the other hand, if people said, hey, doc, I'm afraid that I might kill myself, well, where's the thought? And these people were usually people that were very overwhelmed. They didn't really see a solution. They were often dragged in by their parents or someone who was already frightened for them, and you had to take much stronger action. And so that gave me a very strong cue as to how do I take action with this gift. And if you translate that to a marketing context, there are very subtle differences in the keywords that people type in, and even offline, there are very subtle differences between the advertisements that they respond to in different trade journals and magazines, and sometimes differences in the trade journals and magazines themselves that will cue you into the exact conversation that's going on in your head so that you know how to bring them into your sales process and connect with them and get them what they need. A classic example, your list knows me as a guinea pig guy, and I never really thought I was going to be famous for being a guinea pig guy, but there's a big difference between people that type in guinea pigs and people that type in guinea pigs, plural. When they're typing in the singular, it turns out that they're usually looking for what is a guinea pig and what do they look like and what's their origin, and they're looking for a basic orientation.
Yeah.
But if they type in the plural, they're a little bit deeper into the market, and now they want to know, well, how long do they live, and do they bite, and are they good with kids, and how do you take care of them? I think one of the biggest things that I've done is figured out a way to understand the conversation behind every keyword, because I had so much benefit from that from my early life as a psychologist.
In a really practical context, what most people are going to do is they're going to bid on guinea pig and guinea pigs in a pay-per-click situation. People who don't know very much about pay-per-click are going to lump those together and just send people out to a website, right?
Yeah.
But know a little bit about pay-per-click might separate guinea pig and guinea pigs and write separate ads. But what you found is you still probably aren't going to send them to the exact same web page because they actually want different things and they consistently want different things. And it's not all that hard to find out.
Not all that hard to find out. And you don't have to make a separate sales process for every single keyword. There's a process for determining the optimal number of segments, separate groups in your market.
Yep.
So that you are not wasting your time and effort, but you're also not mixing in people that want different things.
Mm-hmm.
There's another really important point about that. The word guinea pig and the word guinea pig usually eventually gets searched by the same person. Mm-hmm. Little 9-year-old Susie comes home and says, hey, mommy, I saw a guinea pig in school today, show and tell, and I want one. But the mommy goes in and she types in guinea pig because she's hardly ever heard of them before.
Yeah.
And then she gets the information about what is a guinea pig, and then she kind of picks up that she should be typing in guinea pigs, and then she learns more about their care and their feeding and whatever good with kids. And she figures out, oh, I'm going to have to build a guinea pig cage or buy a guinea pig cage, and she types in guinea pig cage or something more specific about guinea pig care. And then finally she might go to buy a guinea pig or adopt a guinea pig or rescue a guinea pig.
Uh-huh.
But there's this progression.
Right. There's a whole series of things that she zeroes in on. She gets more educated and more informed about what these terms are. And
exactly. Here's the thing that's extremely powerful that very few people kind of get the first time I say it, which is that because there's this progression, first of all, there's usually a higher volume of searches at the early end of the continuum, you know, where they're testing and getting kids, but those searches are less ready to make a buying decision. Those are not the people that are going to call up as you need a shelter or go visit with a breeder or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, the keywords at the early end of the continuum, at the beginning, are cheaper and available in more volume.
Right.
Whereas the keywords at the end of the continuum, which are what people usually think of in the long tail, the very specific keywords, those are more expensive, but also easier to convert. And so what do most marketers do? Most marketers go after the more specific, more expensive keywords, and they're working in an environment where they've got much more competition, and their cost per acquisition is much higher. Whereas if you understand the conversation behind every keyword and how that conversation progresses from the beginning to when they're ready to make a buying decision, well, you can intercept them at the beginning where the keywords are less expensive and where there's more people. And it's like a double whammy. You wind up being 4 or 5 or 10 times better positioned than most marketers because you're getting prospects cheap and you're taking them out of the competitive environment because now you can educate them instead of requiring them to search. You can educate them of, you know, how to build a guinea pig page and take care of them and take them all the way through with the buying decision.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very, very powerful concept that I spent a lot of time focusing on in my method.
There's an example of that that I found very early on when I was starting to teach pay-per-click. It was the difference between headache, migraine, and Imitrex. We all know what headache is, and we all know what a migraine is, and Imitrex is a prescription drug that knocks out a migraine headache in 15 minutes. Magic pill kind of thing. Imitrex is about $4 a pill, by the way. something like that. Maybe it's $16 a pill. It's like really, really expensive. Well, headache is a 10-cent keyword, roughly. Migraine is a 50-cent keyword, and Imitrex is like a $5 keyword.
Right.
Because Imitrex is an exact solution to a very aggravating problem. People who do this stuff figure out Imitrex is a real valuable keyword. Well, the reason headache is 10 cents is that even though there's an awful lot of people with headaches, there's way more searches on headache than there are on either of the other words, that most people can't figure out how to make it work. Now, what your method does is it provides a systematic framework for finding out exactly what's going to make that work so that everybody else is floundering around on the word headache and you know exactly how to step them through a process where they end up buying your Imitrex.
Here you go.
Right?
Exactly.
Well, that's pretty valuable. And when you can build that maze and be able to take relatively inexpensive traffic, and maybe your machine goes 3 or 4 different directions, but you end up making money from all those channels, you know, that's a big deal.
Well, because going in 2 or 3 different directions means that you've identified more than one selling opportunity on that search continuum.
Yeah.
So whereas most marketers are targeting a single need, you're taking this educational approach and you're intercepting people early, and to become vital to you, and this is a way to have a customer for a lifetime and take care of them for all the needs they have in that category.
And take them off the market. They're not searching anymore.
Yeah, that's no idea.
That's the whole goal when you're a marketer and you're buying clicks is, okay, they type in headache, they come to my website, and they never, ever do another search for headache, migraine, or anything else again. I take them off the market.
Got it.
Right?
Yep.
Hey, let's do that.
So let's go back to this interdisciplinary thing again, because I'm really jazzed about that.
Uh-huh.
You know, my other career was consulting for Fortune 500 companies. It's kind of a very weird direction my life took. I had to take a course in computer modeling of behavior in order to graduate my grad school. And I never thought I would use it. It's kind of late in applying, so I had to study it myself, and I couldn't even get into the class. I had to make the class up and get a professor to rubber stamp it. But I had to study like crazy to do that, and so I got really good at it. What that meant was I would set up situations where I would translate human behavior into something that a computer could look at. And that could be something as simple as the answer to an open-ended question. What's your most important question about guinea pigs? Well, most marketers these days are just kind of looking at the answers and getting a sense of qualitatively what the most important questions are and which are less frequent. But what I saw very early on was that if you really put that into categories and built a code book for it, then you could look at the relationship of those answers to other questions you might ask people, like how hard it was finding information, or even gender and age and demographics, and that when you did that, the computer could see things that you wouldn't see just scanning through with a naked eye. For example, it could see what information, what questions people were having a very difficult time finding on the internet. That's the difference between point of difference and a price of entry. You know, a price of entry benefit is something that every product is expected to have or it's not even going to be considered.
Okay.
Whereas a point of difference is what will get people to actually buy.
So every car has to have tires, but the sports car is expected to have these really special Pirelli tires, with, right?
Definitely in a certain degree of acceleration, and there's a way of figuring that out. What people will actually pay for versus what they just expect the product to have. And one of the keys to doing that is going through the effort of quantifying the qualitative information in your surveys and then making sure that you're asking things like how difficult is it for people to find the information. And I'll also ask people if they'd be willing to talk to me afterwards, if they'd be willing to leave their phone number. Because I figure that if people really want to know something, then they'd be willing to give up anonymity and spend some time talking to me, especially for markets where you're going to have to do some telemarketing. Like if you're doing lead generation and you want to know which leads do I emphasize when I'm spending time and money to pay telemarketers to call them. Well, the market areas where people left you a phone number in your survey is a very good bet that they're going to be open to telephone calls.
Right, and so that's a very real indicator of how many of these people are likely to buy from you, too.
Yeah. So when you start to combine some of these things, how difficult it is for people to find the information, and will they give you their phone number, and do they just write a couple of words, or did they write a whole paragraph with a lot of details, and you start to be able to see which questions people leave their phone numbers for and which questions they give more quality responses for. You can start to zero in on the market areas that really represent market depth, really things that people very much desire but are not getting on the internet. What's that quote from that librarian? We're drowning in information but thirsting for knowledge.
Yes. And I would even add that and a lot of people don't even have a clue about wisdom, which is like yet another thing. There's this sea of information out there, and there's all this kind of stuff. And people really do not have the time or the patience to go look for the needle in the haystack, right?
Exactly.
And I think when all of us started using search engines, I think we all discovered that we really didn't want to sift through page 5, page 6, page 7 of all these results on the search engine in order to hopefully find this little nugget, because it was so much easier to just go do another search, right?
Yeah.
What our job really becomes then is, we've got to put the thing that they'll pay money for in front of them right away. And if they're not educated about buying, then we need to understand, based on what they just did, where they are in the buying process, so we can just step them right into exactly the next step.
Exactly.
And when you do that, it is so powerful. And like in the case of your guinea pig site, you've done that so well that every time a competitor come into your market, it's made your sales go up, not down.
I find that in most markets, actually.
Most markets.
Yeah.
Isn't that a great place to be?
I'm always a little scared when I say that, because sooner or later some competitor is going to come along and prove me wrong. But I guess it's that if you really understand your customer better than anybody else does, you know, most people are lazy and not willing to take the time to do this. They don't realize that this is $1,000 an hour work. They're looking for the quicker and easier way.
Right.
And so when people try to come into a market, they look for a quick and easy way to do it. And theoretically, you could reverse engineer what I've done in any market. Theoretically, you could take the time and go sign up 4 or 5 times under my different segment, pick a different value for the drop-down every time you sign up, and then follow the follow-up sequence for 6 months and see which benefits I'm highlighting, which ones I'm prioritizing, and study the difference in the sales letters. And by the time you've done that, by the time someone realizes that that's what they have to do, they say to themselves, I'll just go off to another area. It's kind of like a thief who sees a house with a really good alarm system. Because he's a thief, he's looking for the easy way. He's looking for easy picking, so he's not going to go bother you.
Right. Well, isn't that how most of us end up safe instead of having our house robbed?
Yeah.
Or if a bunch of lawyers decide to sue somebody, they have to do a little due diligence, and for some people it could be, wow, you know, this guy's stuff is sitting there right for the taking. Or for a different person, it's, well, this guy's stuff is hidden in 4 different trusts and 6 different corporations, and man.
It's a much bigger obstacle, a much bigger wall for them
to get. So if that's what you've got, like, there's much easier markets to go tackle than guinea pigs, because Glenn has done guinea pigs right. position, right, to completely dominate that market. And so, and it tends to scare people away. Now, the other comment is, one of the things that I've learned in doing what I do is that I sell a lot more stuff if I make things sound really, really easy. And that's unfortunate that that's the way things are, but that is the way things are. I would submit to you that going through some of these steps before you dive into a market is the easiest way to make it work.
I'm not looking to spend extra time or do extra work in any way, shape, or form.
No. No, you've got over a dozen different businesses that you're running, right?
Yeah.
It's not like every time you do one, you want to make it harder. Nothing could be further from the truth.
I just become more and more convinced. Whoever understands the customer best wins. It's that simple. And when I want to go into a market, first of all, I'm going into bigger and bigger markets. So I started out with these $10 guinea pig bucks, but now I'm selling things with $1,000 tickets, $2,000 tickets.
Yep.
And if I'm going to take the time and energy to do that, then I want to make sure that I do it right. So I've been more and more convinced that what you're really doing is moving the learning curve up front. You're moving it up front before the launch instead of after the launch. Of course, there's still testing and tracking and learning that goes on after you launch like normal, but how cool is it to start right out of the gate, profitable rate, and be, you know, 98% confident that you're going to get there?
Yep.
One of the reasons that I am 98% confident of the profitability when I actually get to the launch is because there's also a process for quantifying the risk involved in every keyword group that I'm going after, and if you're talking about offline markets and every media channel that we're going to be advertising in, the way of kind of backing into that so you know which media channels and keyword groups to launch with and then which ones to try to roll out to afterwards because they're a little more risky.
Okay, so in other words, most people go to Word Tracker or Overture somewhere, they get a list of keywords, and that's all great, but after they go through your process, they're going to know, well, this is the one that's going to be the easiest to make money with, and this is the second easiest, and then these other ones here are the ones that are going to take some more effort.
Basically, that's because the tendency for people to begin a relationship with you as a marketer, either sign up for your newsletter or to accept a phone call or to telephone you, their tendency to do that is in direct proportion, I find, to their willingness to take a survey. And when you can look at the statistics by keyword group, then you know that X percent of the people took your survey, you know, X times Y percent of the people will actually sign up for your newsletter. Usually if I do a really good job with my sales process, you know, between 5 and 10% of the people minimum who signed up for the newsletter are going to wind up buying something. And then all you do is you've looked at what are people successfully selling to that keyword stream already. If they're successfully selling a product that's got a $20 margin and you know it's costing you 5 or 6 cents a click, well, you've got to be able to make a sale within 300 or 400 clicks or it's not going to be viable.
Right.
You can work out what your estimated cost per sale is going to be, what your estimated cost per lead is going to be. And this is a really big secret to launching something profitably because you kill all the media channels that are not going to be profitable or that look like they're not going to be profitable right out of the gate until you know what your surplus is and you can roll them out slowly.
This has always been the thing that separates the men from the boys in pay-per-click is that there's all these words and everything that appear to be the same and they're not. And there's some that are going to make a profit, some aren't. And if you could just focus on the ones that are going to be profitable. And again, the point is here, you can make that determination without first trying to sell something to all these different keywords and determining over months and months with conversion data that, well, gee, I guess these people don't want to buy anything.
Right.
Not only that, sometimes it's not that they don't want to buy anything, it's that you didn't understand what they were looking for. So the guy that searched on guinea pig was looking for one thing. The guy that searched guinea pigs was looking for other things. And so to somebody that thinks everybody's the same, you know, one of those keywords will only generate 15 cents of revenue. do, but to somebody that figured out what they really wanted, maybe it's worth 30 or 40.
You know, I think that's a good point also, because people hear that I developed this formula by going into market after market after market, and going to do all this research before the launch. However, the truth is that the more valuable place to apply it is if you've already got an existing business that's got some income. Because most people think, and most people treat their prospects as if they all fall into one bucket.
Right.
And Terry, I think the way you put it is people think they've just got a bunch of green ping pong balls going by, but really they've got some green ping pong balls and yellow ping pong balls and red ping pong balls going by, and if they take the time to learn exactly what each of those ping pong balls wants, then, you know, you can double and triple and quadruple your profitability.
Uh-huh.
Just like most of the people on your list that have the experience of peeling and sticking keywords into separate ad groups. And when you do that, you so dramatically increase the message to market match that it's not unusual to get 2, 3, 4, 5 times the click-through rate. This is just carrying that principle to your landing page and your sales process. That's all this is.
So tell me how this has evolved. And what's the difference between the underachiever method, which, you know, uses some similar concepts, and what you're doing?
Okay. First of all, I respect the underachiever method, and Frank Kern and Adele, and I think they've got some very valuable training, and they've actually packaged it up in a easy-to-understand way for new marketers. So I would consider this to be a dramatic build on the underlying principle. And the underlying principle is survey them and then sell them. You know, if you got a group of people in a room and you ask them what they want for lunch and you take very careful notes and you go out and you get them what they want for lunch and you bring it back, then the odds are very good that you're going to be shooting fish in a barrel. They're all going to buy that lunch from you. And so if you can survey a market and take very careful notes on what they want and go back and give it to them, the odds are really good that that's what they want, they're going to buy it. But there are probably about 24 enhancements that I brought from these different disciplines in my background. One of them is looking at this on a more granular level and looking at what the individual keyword group wants and not just what the market as a whole wants. Another one is looking at the points of difference as opposed to the price of entry, looking at the depth of relationship that people are interested in. There's some more advanced stuff that I can do to find out what group of people is most likely to be hyper-responsive and exactly what they want as opposed to the rest.
Let's pause for a second there. You know, the word hyper-responsive, I remember when I was somewhere and the subject of hyper-responsive came up, and it hit me that I had always sort of thought of, well, okay, I got the people that didn't buy and I got the people that did buy. And obviously, we don't make any money from the people that don't, so I want buyers. But then there's another kind of person, which is the hyper-responsive customer. This is the customer. They don't just buy one thing. They buy everything you got, or they buy most of the stuff you've got. Or when they're offered basic, small, medium, large, they order the large. They spend a hugely disproportionate amount of money. And the hyper-responsives are like 5% of your list. And if you structure your business correctly, they are also 50% of your profit.
Because of the 80-20 rule that you've been teaching.
Yes, it's the 80-20 thing, and it's a whole lot easier to serve 5% than to try to cater to 100% of your customers.
And Terry, the thing that I really learned from you is that when it comes to those 5%, your thinking about them as a marketer is actually the opposite of your thinking about the rest of your list, because for the less responsive portion of your list, you're trying to figure out how to keep my cost per acquisition at a reasonable rate and make sure that I maximize the profit margin on the first sale or two.
Right.
But for your hyper-responsive people, you're actually thinking, well, what can I spend more money on them? What gift can I give them? How can I be in closer contact with them? How can I spend more time and resources, because those come back to you in faith.
Yeah, and so there's lots of people don't understand hyper-responsive buyers, and so they don't do anything about it, and so they automatically leave a very sizable portion of their profit on on the table. They never know it's even there. They spend all this effort trying to shave pennies on marketing expenses, shave pennies on clicks. If we add $6 shipping and handling, we'll make this much more money and all that. And that's all fine, but then they're leaving all this money on the table. When you understand the hyper-responsive group and you cater to them, then you're vastly more profitable. And what only a few marketers know, that you can start an entire business catering to hyper-responses and ignoring everything else, and you might be able to mine a considerable amount of profit from a market with a very, very small operation.
Here's a very specific example that I think most of your list could relate to.
Okay.
You know, a great deal of your list, I would imagine, uses an opt-in form.
Yeah.
And some of those people on the opt-in form will have a question like, the headache example, what's your most significant challenge with your headaches today?
Yep.
And maybe some people would actually go as far as to collect gender and age categories on the opt-in.
Maybe, yep.
Some people would, some people wouldn't. But what if you figured out that there were certain questions that people would submit, there's certain major concerns people would submit in that box that made them 18 times more likely to sign up for a continuity program or Imatrex? You know, so the lifetime value of that customer is worth like $1,000 a piece.
Mm.
Well, if they were 18 times more likely when they typed in, I've had chronic headaches for 3 years, and you know, if they mentioned chronic headaches and they mentioned that their work capacity has been reduced, and let's say they're even more responsive if you know that they're men versus women.
Mm.
Well, you can set up a little scoring system on your site to show you how likely it is that person is going to respond to a continuity offer. And then you can get on the phone and call those people in particular, knowing that you're really working the bullseye. I think most people in internet marketing, at least when they get started, they think, well, email is free to send and communicating with people doesn't cost anything, so let's not bother figuring out which is a better prospect and which is a worse prospect. So, so there's all this waste in marketing. What they don't realize is they're training people not to read their email list.
That's right.
Yeah.
Big mistake.
This is a way that you can laser target your best prospects so that you can go after them full force.
That's right. And it may well be that offline marketing, you know, sending stuff in the mail, sending things like that, may significantly increase that. And if you can figure out who those people are first, well, hey.
That's what it's all about.
Then you only have to send those letters to one-tenth as many people. That's a big, big deal.
I actually was fortunate enough to apprentice myself to the director of core development at American Express. This was in the days before the internet, or when it was just like 1992, 1993. And he was teaching me that when American Express is recruiting for new card members, well, they're not just going to send out a million pieces of mail to any old list.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a very sophisticated algorithm for figuring out who's likely to respond because, you know, they're talking about spending millions and millions of dollars on, on the mailing, and there's no reason we can't do that also. Just because we're small entrepreneurs and we don't have access to a team of statisticians, the formulas that you need to segment your prospects in terms of their probability of responding and isolate the hyper-responsives and really implement a lot of the technology that Fortune 500 companies have been using, you can really do it using just a simple spreadsheet and a simple survey.
Let me pick up on that because, first of all, yeah, Fortune 500 companies do this kind of stuff. And the irony is that just based on having worked for big companies, I would say, first of all, most of them end up bungling the use of that information anyway.
Yes.
Okay. So they might have done all the research right, but the sales manager's got a big ego trip or somebody's still sniffing some glue somewhere, and they end up throwing all that information away and not really using it properly. Secondly, they can afford that waste a lot more than we can, and if you're a small entrepreneur, we all know how fragile that can be, and the difference between failure and success is sometimes very small differences, right?
Absolutely.
And the third thing is words like statistics and metrics have gotten thrown around here, but one of the things that was really intriguing, Glenn, is you were developing all this stuff is when you first started publicly talking about this at the seminar and different stuff like that, this was at a stage where if you wanted to do Glenn's method, you had to take all the research surveys and all this kind of stuff, and at some point you inevitably had to know something about statistics stuff. And the advice at that point was, like, how to hire a grad student, which all this was doable, but it was really intimidating for most people. And so you kind of panicked.
I did.
Because you were getting a very sluggish response from some of my coaching members, and you went into this panic, and you went, reformulated this into something that could all be done on a spreadsheet.
I made kind of a for dummies version, which when I looked through it, I realized that probably about 92% of the value can be done with, you know, addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, looking at percents.
Yep.
Like most eggheads, I'm kind of enamored with the advanced software and techniques, and I like to sit in my computer and play with these fancy statistics. But the truth is that it's all about building a code for your open-ended questions, which is something that any 10th grader could do, sorting those codes into separate groups, you know, based upon responsiveness, based upon gender, looking for differences, which you all do in a spreadsheet, and then looking at the relationships amongst the groups so that you can understand that search continuum, how people go from one keyword to the next, to the next, to the next. And that's what it's really all about that gives you the bulk of the value.
It's really not all that hard at all. Brian and I have implemented some of these methods on our website and in our sales funnel. We've got existing stuff. It was already working. We didn't want to screw anything up. So what we did was we took little slices of our traffic, and they're going into these survey buckets, basically. And we're finding out what people want, what people are stuck on. What's happening here is we're learning things about our prospects where the traditional split testing and the usual approach would have only told us what worked in acquiring customers that we were already getting. And so we're learning about our prospects much more than ever before. And we're understanding all kinds of new things that we just would have completely missed. Because when you ask people questions, they'll tell you things that you just never otherwise would have possibly expected.
And in a language that helps your sales letters more or less write themselves. People get scared that, well, if I'm going to have to break up my sales process into three or four processes and have all these different follow-up systems, well, what actually happens with the systems is you see the language that people are using for every benefit you could have to offer, mm-hmm. and a lot of benefits you didn't think of.
Yep.
And you get the exact priority of that language. So you kind of know how to order the bullets and order the subheads and what goes in the headline and what next most important, next most important, next most important. And you see how those priorities are different for the red ping pong ball and the green ping pong ball and the yellow ping pong ball. And the sales letters more or less write themselves. So it actually takes a lot of the agony out of writing the sales letter. And also knowing that you are writing a sales letter that matches exactly what they want, it gives you a lot more energy and motivation to get the sales letter done than sitting there agonizing, well, you know, should I use this word or that word? And
you're not even worried that you're guessing. Like,
right.
Okay, they
right.
told me what they want, so now I'm going to explain to them that this is what they're going to get. It's so much easier.
There you go. So, Kurt, have I covered the principles? Should I talk about what I actually have available if people want
yeah,
to?
Yeah, please, because I think this is a huge shortcut. Does it involve work? Yes. But I would submit that going through this process involves less work than however else you might do things. And especially going on half-cocked or just thinking, you know, boy, this is so much better. So yeah, Glenn, please, I've kind of watched this all get put together over the last 6 months. Yeah, tell us about it.
First of all, regarding the work, I would say that it requires time and effort the first time through. You really need to absorb the materials and organize your advertising and figure out how to put the surveys up and get step-by-step guides and a flowchart. And the seminar was done, which, by the way, Terry came as a student to the seminar.
Yeah, and I had a great time. It was very insightful.
it was a real honor for me to have Perry and Brian come as a student and then go back and actually implement what I taught them. But I did write outsourcing guides for every module. I set things up in modules so that you could outsource pieces and parts that you don't want to do the second time through. I really do suggest people do it the first time through by themselves. Initially, I'm not going to do this for the long run because I'm not a dollars for hours kind of guy, but initially, I'm giving people 3 individual consultation coupons with the system so that you can fax me in a note about how you're doing or what you're doing. You can get on the phone for half an hour and go over the best way to implement for you personally. You do get some very personalized attention. There's all kinds of bonuses and whatnot. But basically, we had a 2-day seminar at my house. Perry was there, Frank Leek was there, Brian Todd was there, Bill Harrison was there, and a number of top marketers. And I gave everybody permission to interrupt me at any time if there was anything that they didn't understand and they thought needed clarifying, or if they wanted to contribute something, just like Perry's been doing throughout the course of this call. It was an organized lecture, but we also had some very strong masterminding going on, and I think that some people that have watched the DVDs feel that, you know, sometimes the value of the mastermind was even more than the value of the seminar. There's a couple of bonus seminars you get. There's about 12 extra hours of audios. And what I'd encourage you to do is to go over to
themagicofresearch.com. Themagicofresearch.com.
And you can look at the dozens of video testimonials from the people that were actually there. A lot of things that Perry said while he was there that didn't actually say in this call. You might want to take a look and see what Perry said and what Brian said and get a sense for yourself of that's really in the package. And did I leave anything out, Perry?
I just wanted to say that when I started to master Google AdWords and figure all this out, internet traffic became this very controllable scientific enterprise. It's like, okay, I buy these keywords, I write these ads, I optimize the copy, here's the landing page, here's the opt-in page, here's the sales letter, and we test and we track and we do all this stuff. Well, gee, what else is there? It's kind of like at the end of the book, Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins. Somebody says to him, this is so scientific and this is so figured out that there isn't anything else to figure out. And I kind of felt that way for a little while. And then it turns out, well, that's never quite true. There's always this new discovery. And in this case, it's discovering there's a whole nother dimension to this that most people are totally ignorant of, and there's nothing quite like when you know something everybody else just doesn't know.
Right.
And I can assure you that most marketers are not going to get to this level of knowledge. And when you have this kind of knowledge at your disposal, it's pretty powerful stuff. So this is something we're using in our sales processes. You know what, Glenn, I got to tell you a story, and I've never told you about this. I think you'll like this story.
Please.
I'm on the board of directors of a startup company that's creating software for certain markets, okay? And they got me involved because the guy that I'm a good friend with, he says to the president of this company, you've got to get Perry. He's a marketing genius. You got to. All this kind of stuff. So they get me in. So I'm in the board of directors, and this is a startup company. Startup in every sense of the word. They're developing product right now, and the product is not ready for showtime. And I told them, like just before our board meeting that we had, I had come home from your seminar and learned this whole survey method. And I got there, and they're like, okay, we're going to start buying traffic 6 months from now because the software will be ready and it's going to be working and everything like that. And I said, no, here's what we need to do. We need to use Glenn Livingston's survey method.
Oh, cool.
Okay, and we need to buy traffic now. And we need to find out what all these people want and how to talk to them and how they talk back to us. And which pockets of keywords and which pockets of traffic actually contain likely buyers and which ones don't. So the president of the company says, okay, that sounds like a good idea. And I put together a survey, and I gave it to him. And then I get this email says, well, we decided to skip this because, well, don't have time to explain right now. Well, I was too busy to go try and fight him, so I just let it ride. Like, well, whatever. And I thought, obviously, I am not charging these people enough money because they're not listening to me.
Right.
So then we had another board of directors meeting, like, 2 weeks ago. We sit down, and everybody's talking, and everybody's giving their opinions and all this kind of stuff. And one of the guys notices that I'm not saying anything. I just sat there. I didn't say anything for, like, a half an hour, 45 minutes, and everybody's going on and on and on and talking about all this stuff. And this guy says, hey, Perry, you haven't said anything. Well, you got me started. And I gave them all a big whipping. I told them, and I mean, I got very stern with these guys. And most of them don't really know me. Matter of fact, none of them know me the way people listening to this recording know me. You know, I was just another guy in the board of directors, another investor in the company, whatever, right? And yeah, Perry's some kind of marketing guy. These people did not know that I charge people $725 an hour to talk on the phone.
Right.
Okay? They do not know that it's like my job to stay on the cutting edge of marketing stuff, and that most of my customers do not have what this company has, which is the luxury of investors buying in at $20, $50, $100,000, and then, okay, you know, we've got, 6 months, a year, 2 years to make something work. Most of my customers do not have any of those luxuries. Okay, my customers have to make things work now. We had a pretty confrontational board meeting, and I told them that the least expensive way to find out how to talk to these customers and what they wanted and what it was going to take to make this work, how we were going to write the copy and make the pages and what offers to give and everything else, if the cheapest way to do it was to buy the traffic now and do these surveys and find out what people want and that the sales process before we even have a product to sell.
Right.
I said, if you wait till after you've got a product to sell, then you add another 6 to 9 months of figuring things out, and you're risking all your investors' money to do it. And that would be stupid.
I love it.
So we go through all this. There was this lady. She was like, well, why would anybody want to take a survey? I wouldn't take a survey. I go, I don't care if you take a survey. Maybe you wouldn't, but some percentage of people will, and we got this all figured out. We know that if X percent of people take the survey and fill it out, that translates to Y percentage of buyers once we got a product. We know that, but we don't have the website already yet. The website would screw up the survey results.
I love hearing this. It like all falls under what I think of as marketing illusion. It's a little bit counterintuitive, and most people won't do it because they don't have the website ready yet, or
right.
You know, it's not part of their normal process, and that's all the better for those of us who do. It's all the better because
that's
it gives
right.
us that much more of an advantage over the competition.
That's absolutely right, and I pounded sense into these people. I answered every single objection, and I even had to do a thing which I don't really enjoy doing, but I kind of had to assert my authority and my expertise. You know, some guy was sitting there with a laptop, and I say, okay, I want you to type in Google AdWords. Do a search on Google for Google AdWords. And I'm showing all this. Okay, so what do you see? Where's Perry? How many times do you see Perry Marshall? How do you do this and that? Now, I'm not the kind of guy that enjoys doing this, but I just kind of had to rub their nose in it to get them to pay attention. By the end of our meeting, everybody was convinced, okay, I agree, Perry's right. We need to do this. It's the least expensive thing. Then the meeting after the meeting with the president and this other guy, then I thanked them a little more. And it's like, okay, we are doing Glenn's survey method for this startup company. There's
Very
no
cool.
ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's the least risky way to figure out how to talk to all these people. If you can buy keywords on the open market, then we're going to buy keywords on the open market, and we're going to make this work, and we're going to make all of this work before we go to the partners and the organization and the trade associations and people that would send us highly qualified traffic, like the really good customers. If somebody's got an email list and they got a relationship with their email list and they can recommend your product, that's much higher quality traffic than what you get from pay-per-click.
Exactly.
But you only get it once.
Gotcha.
And if you screw it up the first time, there is no second time. So what you have to do is you have to go buy traffic as a commodity on the open market and make it work.
No matter what you do, it should all proceed from understanding your customer better than everybody else.
Yeah.
No matter what you do, no matter what your marketing plan is, if you don't understand your customer better than everybody else, then you're behind the eight ball.
That's right. That's right. And so hopefully a few months from now, everybody's going to have dutifully complied the way they said they would. Then I'll have a big story to tell. I've got money invested in this company, and there's a lot of other people with money invested in this company. And if I have anything to say about it, we're doing this before we do anything else, especially because the product isn't ready yet.
Yeah.
And nine women can't have a baby in 1 month, right?
Right.
And the product they're developing is going to take time, and they've already got beta testers, and they're all working on that end of it. But just because you made the beta testers happy, and just because you made the people that are most inclined to like your product, just because you made them happy doesn't mean you figured out how to explain it to everybody else. That's why we're doing this. We need to know which keywords convert, which ones don't. All that, it has to be done. And if they wait until after the product is done and then start all that, it's just going to make this whole thing take twice as long. And we don't have twice as long.
You let me know if you want me to show up and beat them up for you.
Well, I'll probably do good cop, bad cop with you or something. Maybe I can be the bad cop and you can be the good one. I don't know, but
that's not as much fun, but I'll take it.
But yeah, so you know, I never even told you that story. But yeah, I mean, do I think it's worthwhile? Absolutely.
Kirk, we kind of talked about the simple math part of it, where you're reducing the risk and identifying the market gaps and doing everything that you do in a spreadsheet. But what we didn't talk about was the human side of it and how a large part of the source of my power is once I'm done with all of the math, and I think of the math as really providing the skeleton of the market, showing me the structure, how the bones are connected together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to put on the flesh and bones, we get on the phone and we talk to people. And my wife and partner, who has conducted over 40,000 interviews in specifically understanding emotional reasons for purchase and linking them to the features that make people believe them, if they were fallacious, it's her philosophy that you want to link an emotional reason for purchase to a logical feature that actually makes sense, that actually delivers it. She demonstrated several times how to do those interviews. And I think her, you and Brian were actually surprised, because Brian mentioned to me that he used to think that that type of interviewing was very touchy-feely and
right.
Tricky information, but
right.
Incredibly powerful if you get someone who knows how to do it. And Sharon was willing to demonstrate, and I actually included a couple of hours of audio interviews in the system itself. So there's that too.
That was actually one of the surprises in the meeting. I've been conditioned by various dogmas that come from the direct marketing world of saying focus groups and stuff like that are silly and fanciful, you know, kind of deal. And, well, not necessarily. Especially if you have somebody who knows how to do it. She went through a number of exercises where some very illuminating examples of how you get to the softer, squishier aspects of what people want. They're easily ignored, but they end up being very important as to whether or not you actually sell to the person. There's definitely some surprise gems thrown in there. Everybody's going to get things they didn't expect. The thing is, you don't know what you don't know.
Right. Well, Trey, thank you so much.
Uh-huh. Very good. Well, I certainly endorse it, and I think people who are really committed to dotting their I's and crossing their T's and going into a market successfully the first time are really going to like this.
Very cool.
Well, Glenn, thank you.
Thanks very much for your time and attention. If you'd like to find out more about the comprehensive marketing research system I've used to succeed in market after market, please visit howtodoubleyourbusiness.com. That's howtodoubleyourbusiness.com.